held recently at the United Nations in Geneva, Switzerland. And for now, that's it. Join us again next week for another edition of Prison Pipeline. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long.
So long.
Just a soul's intentions.
I'm Michael Van Cleek. I'm tapped into the vibe and the rhythm of the river of the city of Portland. And you are too, because you're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Two, three, four.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 0.
Never been done before talking about a subject.
To bring you to the light.
Farewell to you, people.
Hold up.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. A couple of years ago, January 7th, 2003, or 23, there was a gentleman by the name of Tyree Nichols, 29 years old, black man, who ran away from police. He was unarmed, but when police caught up with him, all five of them beat him senseless into death. Caused a lot of outrage. People could not understand why this happened, what would lead to it, why such callousness, all sorts of things. There was a trial, federal trial. There was some conviction, but today we saw a state trial, and three of those officers were acquitted. I want to find out what's going on in Memphis, and I want to talk to somebody who is familiar with what's happening. Her name is Jennifer Kane with Black Lives Matter Grassroots. And Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Can you fill in some of the gaps in terms of the Tyree Nichols case as you remember it? I know I just kind of gave a brief synopsis, but you being there in Memphis, what else do our listeners need to know about that particular situation?
Well, as it unfolded, we all knew it was a cover-up from the get-go. Until the family released the pictures, that's when, you know, the police decided to backtrack and do all of this and do all of that and so-called being transparent about this, being transparent about that. Be honest, being here in Memphis, talking to a lot of people, experienced it. The only difference is between Tyree and a lot of citizens who have interacted with the police. The only difference is Tyree, unfortunately, didn't make it.
Which was, troubling.
Yeah, it's very troubling.
What we understand is that the police there had sort of like a little social club, so to speak, like a little gang, an inner gang or something like that. You know, like some cities they... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it was called the Scorpion Unit. That's nothing new. Shoot, back in the 90s, early 2000, it was called the Blue Crush. Mm. And they was doing the same exact thing what the Scorpion Unit did. Is they just changed the name to different titles to say it's this unit, it's that unit, but it's the same thing.
The other thing that stood out, all the officers were black, and for a very long time, people have pushed, we need more black officers, we need black police chiefs, they'll change the culture, they'll understand, they won't let brutality happen on their watch. What's been the experience in Memphis, which is a predominantly black city, and you have all these, all these black folks in position?
Good question. My answer to that, I'm hoping it's allowed. I'm going to say it in the nice form. Memphis, if you ever want to know the true definition of a house Negro, come to Memphis.
It's like that.
Yes. Come to Memphis.
Wow. So after all that fighting, they wound up being supportive of the power structure?
Yes.
So I take it you weren't surprised to see the acquittal. They said it was an all-white jury.
Was I surprised? No. I said once I saw the breaking news where the trial was actually granted to be out of Shelby County, I said it then. I said, oh, they're going to get acquitted. They're going to get acquitted. Once it got out of Memphis into another county, I knew they was going to get acquitted, because you have to realize Tennessee is a long state. It covers 8 states. Once you get out of Shelby County, it's predominantly white. And the history behind Tennessee, a lot of people forget to know this, but the Klan originated in Tennessee.
Hmm. That's right. Nathan something.
Pulaska, Tennessee.
Yeah. Is Nathan Bedford, if I remember that.
Nathan Bedford. And also, just to throw it out there, because it has not been covered as much as it should be, last Monday, it has been a week and 2 days since the iconic, historic Claiborne Temple got burnt down.
Really? Explain that. What's the Claiborne Temple? We haven't heard that out here.
Yes, Claiborne Temple is the last place where Martin Luther King had his speech at the church for the garbage man strike.
The I've been to the mountaintop speech.
Yes.
Wow. And that that burnt down? What happened with that? How did that happen?
It's currently still under investigation. The ATF and everybody is involved.
When did this happen?
Last Monday.
Jennifer Kane, our guest out of Memphis, with the current change in the administration, and we saw that the Justice Department is no longer going to be pursuing police brutality cases, court consent decrees are being rescinded. We see that there's a push to get pardons for some of those police officers that have been convicted. As we sit here and speak, they're trying to figure out a way to pardon Derek Chauvin, the man who killed George Floyd. these officers were convicted in federal court. What's your thoughts on this now with this current administration? How has the presence and their current attitude and policy changes via executive orders, how has that trickled down to cases like these in Tennessee?
It's I'm just going to look what's going on in Cincinnati. I mean, it's going to get to a point where, you know, either you're going to get justice in your own, demand justice, or y'all going to actually start taking accountability, because we all know this administration is the white supremacist. And like, it has shown its face when he was in office the first time. What he's doing is nothing new. I mean, it's been said, the 2025 initiative, he's just only initiating it and bringing more hatred that's already been there. They're just showing their true colors now.
Right. And for people who don't know what's going on in Cincinnati, we're talking about two incidents. The most recent involves a father whose son was killed by police, and he got in the car the next day and ran over a police officer. And when he was being indicted for that, I guess they packed the courtroom with like 50 police officers, and he walked down the line and looked them all in the eye and was like, I'll take justice. How has that kind of landed with people? And this is coming on the heels of Klansmen and neo-Nazis showing up armed and trying to go into a black neighborhood shortly after Trump was elected. And now to this day, you have people doing armed patrols. So we got this, as you said, the mask has been taken off. People are not being polite. They're going all out and showing their hostility and racial hatred. And I guess it's in that climate, in a place like Cincinnati, we kind of saw, you know, matters get taken into one's hand. And you fear that this might happen down here in Memphis as well?
No. This actually, honestly, this is the time for us as a community to come together. And, you know, a lot of people want to bring up and compare and say, oh, well, what about the black on black crime? I say it's kind of, it has nothing to do with it, for one. And it's kind of strange. You only want to bring up the black on black crime when we're talking about law enforcement and racism that has been unjustly on our people. But when they go out and do school shootings, nobody wants to bring up the white on white crime, you know. You know, they may just mentally ill or something like that. But here, as we, black people need to get off their tail and realize that we are going back. We're not moving forward. We're going back. And today was a slap, and should be a slap in everybody's face, because the justice system has shown its true color, that it wasn't for us, it's for them. What else do you need to see that?
When we hear about the acquittal of three of the five officers, there's something that was just so egregiously wrong. It almost feels hopeless. You know, there's a long line of cops who didn't get convicted. Many got their jobs back, like the killer of Tamir Rice. We saw this in the case of Eric Garner.
Terrence Crutcher,
which that was in Ohio too, right?
If I remember.
I'm gonna remember where that was.
I knew it was up north somewhere. I'm not for sale, but I know it was up north.
But it's a long list, and it seems almost hopeless at this point. And now we have a president who's like, "Yeah, our Justice Department ain't looking for anything." Not that the Justice Department was on top of things in the first place, but at least it gave you some hope, and there was some sort of, you know, we'll do some federal monitoring. With those type of odds, what do you think we should be doing next at this point? Do we throw our hands up, or is there another way that we should be fighting?
man, we stand up and we fight. Like, at the end of the day, we don't need their table. We bring our own table. Mm. What we need to sit at their table for? We don't need them. We have... History have shown us, Black Tulsa. If we didn't have it back then with no resources, just imagine what we can do with all the resources that we have now. We make their pockets. Look what's going on with Target now.
Hmm.
We have to realize our dollar controls them. If our dollar controls them, imagine what we can get done if once our dollars stay within our community. Everybody else come in our community and get rich but us.
So it's time to hit them economically.
Not only that, economically, and I say we're in the Malcolm X generation. We ain't the Martin Luther King generation. That marching did it, but what did it actually do? We still at the same place. You talk about change, you don't have to go all the way back to the Constitution, because they still don't even look and consider us as a human being.
Hmm. You know,
you got to get to the root of it. And it takes all of us to come together and stand up and fight.
What does together look like? Some people say, well, we should vote for a particular person. Some people say the system completely needs to be overhauled. Others are like, we need to just separate and get our own land and be around our own people. For you, what does coming together look like? And can you really have justice to when you have a group of people who I think actually enjoy this type of calamity hitting our community? They get a lot of glee. There's a lot of people that were cheering these cops on and saying justice was served, that they got off and they were innocent. I mean, this is good news for them. So in that sort of environment, what is coming together look like and what does justice look like?
If I go out and shoot you, I'm going to jail. But if someone who we pay to protect and serve us, who's supposed to de-escalate situations, goes out and do it, even, let's take that back, even if my skin was a different color, I would get off for killing you.
Hmm.
It goes back to, again, like I said, there's nothing wrong with the system. The system is working perfectly the way that it was designed. You have to go in and rebuild the entire system. Destroy the system that is in place now and come up with a better system, and that goes to the Constitution.
Hmm. So we have to get rid of what we have in front of us.
Exactly. And the question is, who's really ready to stand up and take their bite on that fight? Because we all know they ain't going down easily. Because they keep making laws to hinder us.
I was going to ask you that. 5 years ago, cities were burning across America, as we saw what happened with George Floyd. Will Memphis be burning tonight, or what do you think will happen in the aftermath of that, considering that Tennessee was one of the first states to be like, yeah, you can run over protesters and all that other stuff. If you see them, you can take them out. So they've already passed laws that kind of criminalize, you know, us, you know, even mm-hmm. marching in the streets, you know, which mm-hmm. was a cradle for, you know, where King was leading protests. So with that being said, what do you think, you know, will people be out in the streets for this?
They need to be. Because what message has been sent to us?
Hmm.
Are we going to allow this on a state level? It needs to be. I'm being totally honest. It needs to be. people need to get out their house and be out there in the street.
Real talk.
There's nothing else that can be said. Not only in Memphis, everywhere. Y'all everywhere showed up for Mike Brown. They showed up for Philando. They showed up for Alton. They showed up for Tamir. They showed up for Tamar Rice. They showed up for Sandra Bland. They showed up for Sonya Massey. Memphis has so many other cases that nobody even knows, and they're sweeping under the rug. And the unfortunate Tyree case got its exposure because of a picture and a picture. We have so many other cases where MPD, like I said, initially they covered it up, but they had to go back and retract their steps.
Yeah.
But how many other cases that's out there where you got families that feel some type of way and feel like, well, dang, if Tyree's case was on a national level and we saw this, like we saw Rodney King and they got found not guilty, then what about my child case? That didn't get no exposure.
Yeah. I think we're reaching a boiling point, Jennifer Kane. I think we're reaching a boiling point.
If we not at that boiling point right now, something is wrong. We need to have a deep conversation within our community.
I'm still, and I know you said it very politely, but you had a sister that was the police chief. She had these five brothers that, you know, were part of the Scorpion unit. I think one or two of them were actually members of one of the more famous fraternities. I'm glad they took a stand and kicked them out. But I'm just thinking, like, there was so much fight to get individuals that look like us in these positions. And then she's the one covering it up. And these are the guys that actually carried this out. And now they get acquitted. It's almost like they rewarded them and made them overseers. You know, you can do what you want as long as you keep, you know, the masses of black folks in place.
Yeah. But let's go back. I remember during the video, the initial stop, and really no one is really talking about it. The initial stop, the white officer, we didn't even know it was a white officer involved until they came out and released the video. The right officer initiated and pulled out his taser and tased Tyree before he started running. See, a lot of things that was done was also covered up. Like,
so
certain officers.
He was tased first.
Yes.
Wow.
He was tased first. Then he struck out running.
And what was the reason for the pullover?
There was really no reason. That's what they do here. If you want a certain type of car, during that time, she put out, it wasn't an Infiniti. He was in a Nissan, I do believe. Mm-hmm. During that time, it was called Operation Infinity War, where CJ Davis basically gave the okay racially profiling the police to pull over any Infinities.
Wow.
Yeah. So they didn't have to have no reason to pull him over.
Wow, wow, wow.
If they felt like you was doing something or see that you on a suspicious car, quote unquote, they gonna pull you over. And he was in the area of the county, and you talking about the city, the county worse than the city.
Jennifer Kane, we're going to have to break the conversation here. Is there anything that you would ask listeners to do? I know you said come together. Is there anything that, you know, that immediately comes to mind that you feel we could do to kind of move things in a different direction?
It's multiple things you can do. You have organizations like Black Lives Matter Grassroots that's doing the work in the community, getting the people involved, you know, get with the local chapters, and do your research on the chapters, you know, get involved if, you know, if getting involved requires like donations, whatever you feel your heart and desire is to do, you know, it's that time. Cause we're in 1950s. We're not in 2025 anymore.
Real talk. And, you know, for, is this just something for Black folks, or what would you say to ally the Black people at this point?
How can we ask for allies and we can't, and we not together?
I hear you. Well, as Martin Luther King would say, justice anywhere, you know, justice in one place, it means it's justice everywhere. And we got to, you know, step up just on the strength of it being injustice.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what, even if, you know, shouldn't be a condition that we're not together. It's just a fact. It's taxpayer money. You know, people who were there to protect and serve on our dime. And then we had a jury, an all-white jury, as you said, outside the county, who, you know, followed what we consider a Trump agenda. And just reading the transcripts and all that, the prosecutors like, man, we gave all the evidence you could possibly need. How could they say, you know, not guilty? But as you said, we're in 1950 again. It ain't 2025.
Exactly.
Jennifer Kane, out of Memphis, Black Lives Matter Grassroots, thank you for joining us this afternoon. We will keep our eyes and ears to this case, and hopefully people are able to move to action. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome to the show. And, you know, there's a 415 day, a 510 day. And both of these, you know, I think for some people, they lost the original intent behind them occurring. So why don't we start off with a little bit of history as to the 415 day and 510 days and what they were initially about?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having us on today, Davey. But, yeah, the whole reason, you know, 510 day would not exist without 415 day. And the whole reason 415 day existed was as a response to the displacement and the feeling that people in Frisco had of not being welcome in the city they were born and raised in. And it was a stand people were taking against gentrification. And the folks in Frisco actually had a call out, the three R's, I hope I'm remembering it correctly, restoration, reciprocity, and there was one other, but I can't remember right now, but it was basically they were calling for three R's for the community. And, you know, I had learned about 415 Day because one of the organizers Patty Patricia Barasa had contacted me and asked me if I could bring food over and help feed people. And I said, sure. You know, I'm known as the Lumpia Lady over here in the East Bay, in the Bay Area. And I brought lumpia, and I can't remember what else I brought, but I don't know. I brought lumpia and fed folks, and it was beautiful. They had taken, over the years, they would take over different parks, different public spaces. They did a little bit different than us, where they wouldn't announce where they were going to pop up for 415 Day until the day of. Yeah, it was the first ones, and it was in Dolores Park. And what was happening in Dolores Park was, you know, very similar to what was happening at the time at Lake Merritt, where newcomers were coming and taking over the area and, you know, calling police on people who were from the neighborhood who had you know, been using the park for forever. And kind of same thing was happening here. And after I'd gone, I came back, you know, the East Bay, and I went over to one of the venues that I frequented, Somar, which is no longer here. And shout out to the Ramos family. They were out here for 16 years with that place. And ran into a couple of the homies, Jordan Warren, a.k.a. XJ Creative, and Dinaz, and said, we got to do something like this here. And that's literally how it started, was just being like, let's do it. And that's what we did. And it's been a call against gentrification, you know, because what was happening here in Oakland, you know, Lake Merritt became a public space that was very contested. You had incidents happening that had never, you know, would have never have happened prior to gentrification. The young drummer, young Aaron, he was over, he was about 10 years old at the time. He's a youngster who is still to this day playing drums, his trap set drums, a very talented musician. And he was playing his drums over on Grand and MacArthur, and they called the cops on him for, you know, disturbing the public.
Just a little context about that.
Yes.
Yeah, Aaron might have been about 10 or 11. He plays drums. And on the corner of MacArthur and Grand, it's right next to the freeway. You have to walk underneath the freeway. It's literally 20 feet away from him. You walk under the freeway, and he sets up his drums that he always has on a Saturday. And when you go underneath the freeway, you come out to a bustling farmer's market, which has what? Musicians and drummers and all sorts of things. And if I remember correctly, these two women who just moved there approached him and told him he shouldn't be drumming, and tried to read rules and regulations and all kind of crazy stuff. And it's like, this kid had been here for at least 2 years, and the reason why he drums at the lake is because he lives in an apartment, and it's the place where he can drum, and people loved him for it. And that set off a firestorm when it was discovered that cops were called on him, and that came on the heels of a incident that happened a couple of months earlier with Samba Funk. Had cops called on him, and 14 police cars came up after a newcomer to the town went down to the lake, and this was during a blue moon, and confronted them and told them to stop playing their drums. It's like, everybody's out playing their drums. It's like a blue moon. And he assaulted one of them. They didn't assault back, but the police came and held them for like 4 hours. And and so that's that kind of contested space, but that's kind of like some of the many incidents that led up to folks like yourself saying, let's have this 510 day, you know, definitely around the lake.
Yes. You know, like you said, there was many incidences. And this was, you know, 2014, 2015, and, you know, 510 day got started in 2016, and incidents continued. You had Jogger Joe. You had, which is the guy who, you know, was jogging and assaulted a brother who had been living underneath the pergola and threw his stuff in the water. You had that one incident where the young man was out on a run with his son, a young black man, and he came back and someone had spray painted his car with the N-word. You had, you know, MAGA types all of a sudden in, you know, around the lake, brandishing weapons and kind of being threatening to people. You had the young man Demare Hogg was his name, I believe, who was, you know, shot because someone called on him because he was sleeping in his car and he had a gun that in the car that was actually, like, you know, legally licensed to him, and they shot him while he was asleep. Like, it was over and over and over again. And then you had the incident that happened that went viral that, you know, we had already been planning 510 Day. You know, 10 days before 510 Day happened, you know, Barbecue Becky happened. And, you know, that was that incident where this white woman who, you know, you had brought to light, Davey, she was associated with a lot of the right wing MAGA, you know, neo-Nazi folks who were, you know, coming out the woodworks in Berkeley and apparently in Oakland, too. And she had called the cops on a couple of brothers who and their families who were barbecuing at Lake Merritt and harassed them for hours.
And, right, the late Kenzie was, you know, who passed, and the other brother whose name I forget, who actually worked for the fire department, of all things.
Right, Deacon.
And if I remember that correctly, because I saw the internal police reports, she said that they had weapons, which they didn't. And then she called back and said the weapon was the fire pit, and the police responded and escalated that, and they came and tried to go off, and did know that Kenzie's wife at the time, Michelle, who is a white woman, was able to counter the white woman, Barbecue Becky, because she was able to say, no, that's not true, that didn't happen, I was witness to it, yada, yada, yada. And that kind of, you know, the cops just couldn't immediately jump to the aid because he didn't know that, you know, Michelle was with Kenzie. He just saw that there was another witness that was white, because they certainly weren't listening to Kenzie and them. they were going with the side of Barbecue Becky. And her name was Jennifer, if I remember. Jennifer, I'm going to remember her last name. But those were the jump offs.
Yeah, and that viral incident just, you know, kind of drove home what we were trying to bring to light. Like, there is stuff happening here. Like, you know, then there was legislation that was getting passed during that time. You know, they were saying stuff like, you know, but it was not being equally implemented. For example, they said no barbecuing at the lake because, you know, it was dangerous, whatnot. But then these white folks were coming and twirling their, you know, torches on strings or whatever that was, like fire twirlers. But they weren't getting stopped. You know, they were, you know, there was already in place the no open containers, no open alcohol containers at the lake. But you'd have like white folks sipping wine, and right next to the white folks, you'd have black folks sipping, you know, drinking out of, you know, cups. But the black folks were getting targeted, not the white folks sipping wine, you know. And then they had passed a law, and it's the only park in all of Oakland. Lake Merritt is the only park in all of Oakland, which at this time, this was all happening, Parks and Recs passed a law that if you had 12 or more people at Lake Merritt, you had to apply for a special events permit. You know, and the folks really felt that was a target to locals because, you know, if you're not from here, you know, you're going to be hard pressed to get 12 people out there. But if you're from here, by the end of the day, if you've made a couple of calls, you've got like 30, 40 people out there with you. So it was just this ongoing kind of attack on, you know, specifically black folks, but folks from, you know, the town in general, being discriminated against and dissuaded from, you know, being at Lake Merritt, which historically in Oakland, you know, Oakland had never had gangs. There were sets and there were turfs. But Lake Merritt, the sets and turfs were based on the blocks people lived on. But Lake Merritt was a neutral place where everyone could go, and people just knew that, you know, is don't bring the funk to the lake. It was a place for people to come, and then all of a sudden this place is being taken from folks. And so it all kind of just came together, and you know, with the idea of us taking up public space and just enjoying our lives became a form of protest. And you know, Oakland really showed out when and showed up when Barbecue Becky happened, because like we were already planning to do it again, and this whole incident happened. 10 days before the, you know, that annual 510 day, and folks came out, and you know, what captured the nation's attention was how we protested. We didn't protest with, you know, with anger. We protest with joy. We protested with the electric slide, you know. And so it was just another way to reframe what protesting and resilience and resistance looked like. And, you know, historically in you know, marginalized communities in Oakland in particular, you know, culture has always been a tool and a weapon for social justice and for resilience and resistance. And this was just another example of how we showed up like that.
One of the things about that first 510 day, if you recall, mm-hmm. was people did call the cops. Those newcomers did call the cops.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they showed up, I remember, except this time, to their surprise, y'all had permits. And there was nothing they could do. It was like, you know, they came to, you know, kind of disrupt it. It's like, no, we got a permit for this. And, you know, I thought that was just kind of forward thinking, or at least somebody had a permit, because there was nothing they could do at that time. But it was just, if I remember, it was some dude that was on his terrace that was looking out in disgust and, you know, made the phone call. And what you realize, that for some of these folks, it was almost like a game. Like, let me call the police and they'll come in, you know, and maybe, you know, at least cause some problems and they can just go back their business. But didn't work that time, to their chagrin. And that was, you know, that's what I remember about that day.
Yeah, that was the Barbecue Becky year, 2018. And we got a permit because DJ Fuse had come out that year and he didn't want his sound system to get taken. So we got a sound permit for him. But that was the only time we've ever gotten a permit for a 510 day. And we went back to just not having a permit. What was so interesting about that day is that when they called the cops on all of us, they called the cops because there was a whole bunch of Black men there and the sound hadn't even shown up yet. The sound had not even shown up yet. And they were getting calls about sound complaints. The cops showed up, the sound wasn't there. And, you know, the whole thing just looked foolish when they found out we did have a sound permit for that day. There was nothing that we can do. But since then, we've actually, you know, pedaled back and said, you know, we're not even getting a permit this time, because it is this is a protest. And that actually has worked in our favor. You know, another response that happened to Barbecue Becky was barbecuing while Black. And, you know, their second, you know, they wanted to start becoming an annual thing. It was beautiful. You know, you just had all of Oakland out there with barbecue grills lined up along Lakeshore. It was amazing. And they took the route to try to get permits and whatnot. And they got slapped with like $38,000 in permit fees and police fees. And that actually ended, you know, that event from happening. And, you know, kind of in the same light, but, you know, different take was the Fam Bam Juneteenth, which had been happening and growing exponentially at Lake Merritt. And shout out to Brother Travis Watts. You know, they slapped him. They started slapping, you know, because he worked with the city. And then they started slapping him with permit fees. And it was outrageous. And so we've actually avoided all of that.
Right. If there's one thing about that, too, is some of these events, which started out as protests, became big. I remember, I remember Clear Channel came along and tried to, you know, do an event at the lake, kind of to ride off that wave. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Luckily, nobody really, you know, rocked with them on it. But it was just interesting to see, oh, wow, this is popular. Why don't we bring our corporate muscle and might into the picture and let us try and do something? If I remember, you know, they went and rented this thing out and basically, you know, tried to do what everybody had been doing organically. And then just kind of make it a private event. I remember they had like all these fences up and all this craziness. But the point being is that initially, this was something for the community, and it was to bring those who were displaced back. And I guess one of the battles that you now have is that if you can't beat the protest, how can you absorb it? You know, and I think they were trying to do that in the city and somehow incorporate. I don't know where that stands, but, you know, there's definitely been those attempts to, like, why don't we corporatize, you know, these events? And, you know, and before you know it, the reason why it's even supposed to be there ceases to exist, which is why we have you on, to remind people what it's about.
Absolutely. And yeah, that definitely happened in Frisco. It happened to an extent here with 510 Day in Oakland. You know, what was so interesting in Frisco, the city of San Francisco proclaimed 415 Day to be the day of tourism. And the very following year, the city of Oakland's tourism department, which are like, where did we get a tourism department? When did that happen? They did the same thing and declared 510 Day as a day of tourism. And we shut that down real quick. And, you know, here what happened too was that the Raiders and the Oakland A's, which so ironically, they just bounced off Oakland, out of Oakland, but they started doing 510 days. And they were actually very responsible for helping cloud over what 510 Day originally was about, because they were just about, you know, those two, you know, corporate teams both celebrated 510 Day as a way to celebrate Oakland or celebrate the area code, but completely left out the whole point of why we were doing this. And what we've been seeing happening in the recent years is, you know, folks doing 510 Day parties, you know, parties in the evening, to monetize it, to make money, and or build a name for themselves, which is fine. No one, you know, make your money, make your name for yourself, but don't forget why this started. And I have yet to see an after party, and we reached out to some of the places that have thrown these after parties and using the 510 Day name. And we've reached out to them and said, like, you know, even Chabot College this year, you know, they do a marketplace every single weekend. And this weekend, they're calling their marketplace 510 Day. And my daughter actually reached out to them and been like, do you know, you know, I'm one of the folks who organizes 510 Day. And, you know, this is something we started, and it's about, you know, displacement. So can you at least, can you promote the original 510 Day? And can you consider, you know, having some like tenants' rights groups and some homeless rights groups at your marketplace? For you, since you're completely changing your marketplace for one day and rebranding it the 510 Day Marketplace, can you also rebrand how you're organizing it and make sure you've got some tenants' rights groups and some homeless rights groups at this day? And the Chabot Marketplace people said, "Well, we'll promote your event," which they did for one day. After she talked to them, she's like, "But we're not bringing on, you know, organizations that are dealing with tenants or homeless folks." So and then, like I said, we've reached out to the organizations that are throwing 510 Day after parties, and the same thing: people don't want to. And the thing is that if we don't maintain, we can get, you know, we can get lit for Oakland every day and any day, you know, as we should. But on this one day, we're getting lit for a cause for Oakland. And if we don't, if we fail to, as a community, uphold this political stance of what 510 Day is, then we're actually kind of falling for the trap. You know, we know that here in Oakland, and with gentrification, it's, you know, African Americans are the folks who are being the most severely impacted by the harms that this development model has brought to Oakland. And if, you know, and they love Black music, you know, they love the swag of Oakland. They love the culture of Oakland. They just don't want the people who make it. And if we as a community fail to uphold that there is a political intent behind the creation of 510 Day, then we are falling for the trap where they want the culture, they want the benefits, they want the flavor of what Oakland means, but they just don't want the people. You know, so
very sobering words. And I think we saw that when in Frisco, when on 415 Day they declared it Empire Music Day, and everybody lost their mind. Right. because it was a way to kind of overshadow the original intent. I mean, they knew what was going on. They knew what was happening. But then they went and declared it something else and tried to erase the folks that were, you know, behind what it was about. Right. With all that being said, what are the details for this week? Because this time, 510 Day comes on a Saturday.
Yeah, this is the first time it's ever coming on a Saturday. And it's the biggest one yet. So, you know, we'll be highlighting the vendors who are, you know, part of Oakland's culture. And the important part of how we make it different than a regular marketplace is that we have a whole bunch of social justice organizations sprinkled in between all the vendors. And so that, you know, the idea is like folks come, you know, these organizations are coming out for the people to connect. So this is your opportunity to make sure that 510 Day goes beyond just that Saturday. And you can connect with organizations that are doing work every single day to make sure that we have an Oakland that we are part of in the future, and a future that's going to, you know, be thriving for us, that's going to be safe for us, and that's going to include us. And then this year we have a whole bunch of different zones and stages where Afro Entertainment has joined us this year, and they do a monthly party at Lake Merritt in the spring and summer months, and they're going to be doing an extra party this year for 510 Day, and they'll be over at Cleveland Cascade Stair area where the original 510 Day started, and they'll be doing an open mic. They have they'll have a DJ from noon to 3, and anybody, whatever genre you have, if you want to get on and perform at 510 Day, head over there and sign up starts up at noon until they fill it up, and it's an open mic from 3 to 7. If you go further up towards the 580, you're going to run into the Graffiti Art Zone, which is going to be featuring TDK. Is going to be out there painting, and Dawn from TDK is going to be doing some limited edition 510 Day We Still Here airbrush t-shirts on the spot. We got Willie Mays, who is part of TDK and local 1200 from back in the day, a DJ, a politically active DJ crew. He's going to be popping up his new business, the Sunny's Never Over Barbecue. Ash Rose, who's a female graffiti artist here in Oakland, she's hosting a black book party. So that's a call out to all graffiti artists to bring your black books and come and make some art together. When you get past the graffiti zone, you're going to have the youth zone, and I'll have Joyce talk a little bit about that because she's coordinating the youth zone. When you get up to the pergola, you got the housing justice zone where we're going to be having tennis rights groups and homeless rights groups with their booths up there. We're also going to have a couple of panel discussions. There'll be a panel discussion at 3 o'clock around solutions to the homeless crisis and the housing affordability crisis. Groups like Wood Street Commons is going to be talking about their vision for creating wraparound service development hubs that include housing. We're going to have East Bay Prec out there talking about their model of real estate cooperatives. We're going to have the California Reparations Healing Walk out there talking about the intentional communities that they've created, housing communities that they created. And then we're going to have the Misty Cross with the Black Panther Apartments talking about that development as a solution, and why are we not seeing more of that? Those kinds of developments of like deeply affordable, 100% deeply affordable housing and supportive servicing, permanent housing and supportive services. At 4:30, is that right? No, at 4 o'clock. No, 4:30. No, take that back. At 5 o'clock, we're going to be having a panel discussion with homeless advocates about how do we upgrade, instead of using all these millions of dollars to sweep people and to have these mismanaged shelters, how do we actually upgrade people's quality of life in the encampments and also upgrade the quality of life in the management of shelters? And then when you get over the Grand Avenue side, in addition to, you know, the continued hustlers market and organizations that you can plug in with, we're going to have a wellness zone, you know, where people can tap into yoga and herbal teas and crystal, you know, healing and whatnot. And at the, you know, and I'll be behind the hustlers market on the Grand Avenue side in the grass, and then further up the grass we'll also have a comedy stage, and we'll have a couple of other pop-ups along Grand Avenue that we're not going to talk about. You're just gonna have to show up to find out, because we're concerned that people need to people have gotten targeted by the police when we've announced some of the stuff that's going to happen. So we're keeping those folks off the promotions piece, and you've got to show up to see what's about to go down. And then this year we're extending all the way over to Fairyland. The Black Fay Day happens to fall on 510 Day, and Honey Jasmine Gold, who is the coordinator for Black Fay Day here, for folks who don't know, I didn't know about it, but it was it's a day that was created from a sister in the South to kind of create challenge stereotypes around like cosplay and fantasy and science fiction genres, and the lack of Black representation in those genres. And so Black Fay Day is a day for Black folks who are into cosplay and fantasy and science fiction to come be magical and mystical and challenge those stereotypes and kind of show that there's a representation of Blackness in those genres. So they're going to be over at the Fairyland Hill, and
we're running out of time, unfortunately. Okay. But you gave us a lot to kind of build on. If I want to get more information to find out, is there a website or anything, or IG page or something?
Yep. You can follow us on Instagram at 510 Day. And all the details will be there.
Nita B, we appreciate you coming on, and I wish we could get Joyous on, but unfortunately we got to do some housekeeping here. We're a little truncated today, but we'll see you out there on Saturday. And I'm glad that you reminded us all about the original intent of the day. And we can see in real time how people will take the intent of something and corporatize it and separate it from its original meaning. And fortunately, there are people like yourself and others who won't let that happen. And this is a good way to amplify that and remind people that this is a protest, and that at its very core was to bring people back. And in the early ones, and even to the last ones I've been to, it's always been like a family reunion to see the people returning to Oakland from all these other places where they have literally been forced to leave. Many people didn't want to leave, but once rents increased, they were forced to. The irony now is that the places that they moved to have gotten rid of rent controls and rent protections, and rents are just as high in Antioch as they are here, and that's a damn shame. So people got hustled on out, only to find that they're dealing with the same predatory type of individuals, except they're 100 miles away from
Oakland.
From Oakland. We want to thank you, Anita B. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Hard Knock, turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program, turn in for the real talk. Don't stop. EMN at it again. Sandman, Daddy Man, Chris Juwan Kim. Innovation, stimulating ill conversation. Anything else, just imitation. Simulation, step into the zone. The Bay Area zone. Hard Knock Radio, let's go. Big shout out Anita and Davey D.
Yeah, right, feel me. Yeah.
Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kinda crazy though. Oakland, stand up.
Yeah. Stand up.
Ensemble Big Night Wolves.
Yeah. Kansas City.
Yeah.
Bellevue. Come on, check out.
Why every obvious if they hard knock when they ain't going all in and ain't paid the cost of the fee? Hating that they made they beats, trying to eat till they're ready from the steel gray beats. They bleed. I'll save you a seat at the table with a great red making a speech. Say some peace to their lovers, I lay with a please. Hey, there's some shade on your name in the street. You go, hey, it ain't David D.
Real Talk Radio. You and I rocking with the best in the West.
Yes, Coast.
Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
East Coast.
This is Bird Note. early May, we're standing in a large hayfield in western New York State, where bobolinks are returning to nest. The males are first to arrive. Their black and white plumage makes them look, it's been said, as if they're wearing tuxedos backwards. In about a week, the females, too, will complete a round-trip journey of more than 12,000 miles from the pampas of Brazil and Argentina. Why are there now so many fewer bobolinks than in decades past? Probably because the landscape of North America has changed so much. Bobolinks originally nested on native prairies of the Midwest and southern Canada. When much of this grassland came under intense cultivation, they expanded their range eastward to hayfields and meadows. Bobolinks like large, infrequently plowed fields that offer broad-leaved plants, under which the females build their nests directly on the ground. In the Northeast, there are fewer hayfields, and many have been converted to alfalfa, vegetation bobolinks don't normally use. Also, hayfields are now being mowed earlier than they used to be, and the mowing coincides with the peak of bobolink nesting. Support for federal and local efforts that conserve grassland habitat can help these far-flying birds. Learn more at birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
This is Bill McKibben coming at you on KBOO, Portland, Oregon.
Listen to Black.